Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Buttons are pressed.
Buttons are always pressed. Speaking of press, there's a delicious juice company out here in California that's not a sponsor of this podcast, but maybe should be, and that's Pressed Juices. They are delicious, and my lovely lady friend Malin actually sent me a 12-pack of Pressed Juices as a nice little gift, and I've been juicing.
That's right. I thought I could see that could have gone two ways. We could talk about juice, but I know you like Cubanos too. Cubano. You press a Cubano sandwich, don't you?
Oh, that's, I mean, I kind of have a rule of thumb, which I don't have many kind of like guaranteed rules of like on menus when I go out that I'm going to order mm-hmm. something. But if there's a Cuban on a menu, like kind of the rule is I have to order it. So I've been living by that for a long time and it's worked out so far, I think.
Yeah. You like pressing things. You're just that kind of guy and I'm here for it.
I just like that combo of pickles and mustard. It's just a nice combo, you know?
Yeah, it is. What else? Ham?
You got ham and pork.
Ham and pork. That's right.
Yeah.
No, it's everyone I've had, I've never been disappointed. So I can't argue with you there.
No, the Cuban's a staple. So MLP just happened. Mm-hmm. Super finals, San Clemente. Pretty big paycheck, you know, that super finals you're playing for. The winners get 60K a pop, 60K a person. The losers, I believe, get 14K.
Yeah, 46K difference.
Pretty significant.
Yeah, I'd say so. That's significant.
Pretty significant difference. I know they did that last year too, where I think what did the winners get last year is big as well. Is it 50?
Yeah, something along those lines.
And then second place got like not like very little.
Healthy jump.
I just wish it was all a little tighter. Like you would see like in a normal, call it a golf event, where the winner gets 2.1 million and second place gets 1.3 or something, or 1.5. Yeah. I don't know. It's a big delta there.
I mean, we're not talking at this point about any form of life-changing money, but that is significant. 46K difference, you know, for especially for some of these players, not necessarily in the top 10 on each gender, but they are on the winning team for MLP. That's real stuff, and that can really help quite a bit as you move forward in your pickleball journey, getting a chunk of change like that.
Well, it's pretty wild considering, like, at the San Clemente event, the Mad Drops needed the fives to lose, or they weren't even going to have a chance to play for the 60K, mm-hmm. and they would have had whatever their payout was, which wouldn't have been anywhere close to what, you know, for even 14K would be. But they went from not even thinking they'd be in the super final to sneaking into the super final, and not only sneaking in, but also winning 60K a person. Pretty wild turn of events.
Yeah, and winning 3-0, which. I honestly thought as the broadcaster that the most common or most likely avenue would be a 2-2 situation and the Mad Drops win in singles. So just amazing play for them to go up 3-0. And you're exactly right, Rob. So what happened is it's accumulation of points through the three events. So if the New Jersey Fives had won out and actually beat the Seattle Pioneers in the final, the Mad Drops wouldn't even have been in that opportunity. So they were sweating it pretty hard those previous matches, and then the number one or number two, maybe possibly the number three singles team on paper, the Fives, did not have the best record when it came to Dream Breakers throughout the tournament, and then of course losing in a Dream Breaker in the finals. So surprising stuff. Yeah. Getting to the Dream Breaker and results of the Dream Breaker, and then also winning 3-0 against the Pioneers. Nobody saw that coming for the Mad Drops. Well done.
Yeah, and it kind of, you know, you can have on paper a stacked singles team, but as we found out, you know, doesn't always equate to a W in the Dream Breaker. So, you know, as long as the team has players that aren't necessarily like staples in the top 10 in singles, but they can play singles well, you know, but maybe they don't play it all the time. Like, that's really all you need in an MLP team. You know, you don't need to have guys that are consistently, you know, meddling in singles events. You just need somebody that's capable to play 4 points at a time. And that's a lot of people.
Yeah. And I certainly won't say any names, but I mean, in the premier level, I mean, there's only a couple singles players that I would probably label as garbage. You know what I'm saying?
Sure,
so,
sure,
so
sure.
4 points at a time, you're exactly right. A lot of these guys don't play singles because they have no chance of making a deep run, but a lot of them just do it to manage the three events and the body as well. So at 4 points at a time, I mean, I would still consider Riley Newman right around number 10 in men's singles in this format. A regular tournament, whole different situation.
Yeah.
But I think that's fair to note. And I mean, that was the New Jersey Five's whole draft strategy was to, it wasn't necessarily to glue the roster together with doubles partnerships. It was to have good doubles players and have very good singles players. And that was their whole strategy. And of course they've won a couple, they've lost a couple too. Lots of variants in that Dream Breaker format.
Do you think who underperformed in Premier in terms of teams? Would you say it was the Fives in terms of on paper and the hard eights, of course? Mm-hmm. I thought you guys on paper, you know, you should have certainly advanced out of pool play, but mm-hmm. Even made a run to the semis or the finals, even on paper. So Fives, hard eights, who else? Anybody else?
I mean, I guess you could put in the Frisco Pandas, that they just did so poorly. I didn't think that they were a team that was really going to challenge for titles, but at the same time, you know, they definitely struggled, and yeah, that's just part of the deal as they, I think the Riley and AJ had like six match points against Kyle and Samba and Rettenmeier, just whatever. There was a lot of things going on. I liked our squad, and we didn't even make it out of pool play. So, there's definitely some overperformance and some underperformance, and in a format like this, it's going to be pretty stark. The contrast for on paper and actual results, given how quick everything happens.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, do you still feel? I mean, obviously, viewing wise, it's great, right? Like anything can happen. You get a lot of variance in results, in my opinion. I think they've tried to say that there's not a huge variance, but mm-hmm. I mean, every match is pretty tight, and it comes down to whoever plays those big points the best at like 18-18, 19-18. That's what it really comes down to, who plays those big points deep in the game the best. What do you feel like format wise? Do you still feel the existing format's the best way to do it?
Yeah, I'm in on it. And, you know, maybe that has something to do with me being around a year of not playing pro tournaments, you know, sways, you know, that not that I'm in the mix anymore, might sway my decision, but I like it. I like seeing the real pressure and seeing how people respond to it. And I get it. You know, there, even though some of the numbers say it's very slightly less variance in a rally scoring format, I think it's good. I'm for it now that my, you know, natural inclination of resisting change is kind of faded. I'm on board with it, and I like the situations it creates. And from a viewing perspective, I think it's awesome. And if the best team occasionally does not win at a higher clip because of it, that's just part of the deal, in my opinion.
Yeah. Is there anything, looking back on season one of MLP, that you wish was different, whether it be the format, whether it be the draft, whether it be kind of how changes, like in, you know, obviously in Challenger, you can drop and add, and there's supplemental drafts. There wasn't that in Premier. Do you wish anything else like were different, or what would you change?
You know, that's a tough question. I think given the situation, they did a very good job. And I think the one thing that sticks out to me is that ability of a Premier team to not have that pickup, you know, before the tournament, because they're playing Challenger. Of course, once the tournament starts, you do have a player pool to pick from. But I think some of that situation with having the three, each ownership group having three teams in Challenger, three in Premier, is probably not the ideal situation, but something had to happen. So you had to have a different, maybe a little less coveted format to set everything up for 2024. So I think it was more a part of the deal situation than, you know, really something that they could have changed easily. So that's kind of how I see it. And I think that there were some, you know, some bumps and bruises along the way, but I think it was impossible to not have those given just how it all came together so quickly and the rapid expansion of teams going to 24 total. No possible way for it to be a seamless transition.
Yeah. Are we staying at 24 total teams? Do you know?
That's a good question. And I think that that is a good number, but I also think that it's a hot topic and a hot commodity to own one of these teams, whether it's a group or just a couple individuals doing it. So I think that, you know, that being said, that there might be a name or two or a group or two that is going to be hard to turn down. So I definitely think things can change. I don't know if the MLP board already has a couple of those ownership groups lined up that they want to insert, or it might be something that is kind of a, if someone shows interest, we have to work them in. But I think 24 is a really good number right now, whether that's, you know, 16 in Premier, 8 in Challenger, 12 and 12 still, whatever it may be. I like the number, but, you know, this is a how the world works situation. So if they got to squeeze two more in, possibly four more in, then that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think 16 and 8 would be pretty cool. Then you have four, I don't know if they would do it like this, but four pools of four, two advanced from each, go into the quarters. That kind of thing would be good. And I think the depth's there now where that would make a lot of sense. So, and right, that's only going to get better.
Yeah. And I think also if they did decide to do 2024, 16 in, and 16 for Premier, 8 for Challenger, that it would also be reasonable to maybe do bigger pools, like two pools of eight. And so that allows a few extra teams, because it's pretty stringent to get through pool play right now. A lot can go wrong. You know, a lot can go wrong. If you have maybe possibly, we talked about the format having more variants, maybe you have more teams or it easier to make it out of a pool, which would maybe help with that. So I think four groups of four would be completely fine. I have no problem with the format now, but I could see maybe them going to bigger groups and have a slightly easier path to get into post pool play, basically.
Yeah. I like that. I think, getting teams out of pool play and a chance to be in the elimination bracket just makes it fun, right? So
it does, but it also puts a lot of pressure in pool play given the format here. So all the matches at MLP are big. I think it's pretty clear that that's the case, but I mean, first round pool play, if only two are making it out and two aren't in that pool of four, man, it's a lot of pressure right from the get go. So I think that there's something to that as well. We'll see what they come up with.
And it comes down to not, you know, there's 2-1 teams that don't advance, right? That's super common. So, and it comes down to like games won and point differential, that kind of thing. And just the margins are so slim, but it's regardless. We always talk about it. It's, it has a lot of talking points. There's a lot of storylines with MLP, way more so than the tours. So we'll see where it goes in 2024 in the future. But I think MLP's got a lot of room to grow and expand, and it's still the most exciting thing in pickleball.
Yeah. Okay, Robert. So I let's just label you on the cusp of Premier, whether you should slot into that top 24 or be one of, you know, the top challenger players picked, given the differences between the two, especially monetarily, does it make sense for someone who's a little more established in the sport, not necessarily an up and comer like, I don't know, Connor Garnett or somebody like that? Does it make for sure sense for someone like you to play MLP every time? What do you think?
I would say probably not, based on how many events there are outside of MLP and just the cost, you know, the cost and earnings, the cost versus earnings doesn't make a whole lot of sense economically either. So unless there's other, like, you know, I've heard some teams are going to, for Challenger this next year, are going to do kind of, you know, incentives based on wins, that kind of thing. And, you know, bonus money based on that to keep Challenger players interested. Because right now, you know, if you're at the bottom of the Challenger League, you're one of those players, then you're probably pumped regardless, because, you know, you're getting a check when, if you go to other tournaments, you're not getting a check typically. So you're getting a check, you're getting to be on a team. It's fun. It's MLP. So I can see, you know, people like that are going to be stoked, but the cuss, the fringe players that could be in Premier, but don't quite get in, like there's not very much incentive to play MLP. Like the earnings are just so low and it's just not worthwhile, you know, and you could be going somewhere else to play.
Yeah. No, lots of options these days. So I just, you know, cause you were, you know, have a little more insight into that specific than I do. So, I knew through Corinne that, you know, the payouts are, you know, if you have a good ownership group, they take care of you. That sure kind of makes it a lot easier. If you have an ownership group that's not helping a lot, or you have to make your own arrangement, that can be really a tipping point, you know, in terms of making sense, monetarily. So,
I'll go through the numbers. I mean, even for San Clemente, it's like, I think based on my draft position, I got 1250 as my earnings. Brooklyn Aces management's awesome, especially compared to some teams I hear about. You know, they take care of housing always. A lot of the meals, maybe I'm paying for some food out of pocket, but they paid for the flight out at least. So they covered a fair amount, but you know, I still have a car rental, still have other costs and stuff. So even at 1250, it's close to like a break even type situation with my car rental and flight back and, you know, hotel on the other end of stuff. So it's, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. And if you, those numbers, everything you just said, and then you, if you possibly have one of the ownership groups, that's pretty much crickets, you know, hey, see you there. Hope we do well. And then we'll see you at the next one, man, it really doesn't quite add up, if you factor that in. So yeah. Interesting info for sure.
And it's, you know, Challenger's deep now. There's a lot of good players, but you know, compared to, you know, your tour partners, like who I play with on tour, you're playing with a partner that's not quite at that level, typically in MLP. So, you know, you're going to get some results that you don't typically expect. And, you know, then, you know, optically, visibility wise, people look at those results and like, oh, well, he played terrible, without really knowing like what actually happened on court. Right. So, it hurts the brand as well in terms of, you know, as we see in pickleball, optics are everything, and being in the conversation is a big deal. And for whatever reason, you know, whatever conversation's happening on Twitter or the Discord or all these different places, it matters a lot for whatever reason. Like if you're top of mind, you know, you're going to be in the mix. If you're not being discussed, then you're going to be on the outside looking in. So, you know, people aren't always looking at results directly nowadays. They're looking at, you know, what's the conversation that's happening.
Yeah, no, those are good insights. And yeah, I'm good. I got distracted by my phone. I lost my train of thought, buddy.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, just, yeah, I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm playing good pickleball. It's been, you know, a little bit of a struggle the end of last year into early this year, but, you know, I've kind of hit my stride. I feel like I'm playing better than I have. I'm probably playing the best I've ever played in terms of, you know, I still think, even though I'm a more established player in the game, I'm one of those guys that's not just like, I'm like one of the guys that needs reps and needs a lot of touches and that kind of thing. I think my growth isn't like a rocket ship and then plateau. It's more kind of the gradual climb. And even though I'm established and I've been around a few years, I still think I have room to grow. And I'm developing new stuff and I'm always working to get better. And I think getting a lot of tournament reps this year, I'm only going to keep getting better. So yeah, I mean, I think I should be in that mix for, you know, for the bottom level, but the bottom side of Premier. But again, we'll see what happens. I think it hurt me being in Hawaii last year. Just because you're out of the conversation a little bit. I dealt with some injuries. I mean, it was probably the best thing for me mentally and emotionally, but it was definitely difficult being out of the mix. And yeah, I mean, there's still, you know, with Premier where players are responsible for a lot of the picks in some cases, you know, there's still the stigma around me and kind of the personal stuff that's happened. You know, when I found out that Ben was having an affair with my now ex-wife, which, you know, even a year later, they're still together. So, you know, that's been difficult. But at the same time, like, I'm super pumped on the future. I'm playing good pickleball. I've got a great partner now, relationally. So I'm in a happy, healthy relationship with Malin, which is awesome. And yeah, I just want that whole stigma around what's happened personally to kind of go away. It's just so it's not the elephant in the room anymore. And so I'm kind of tired of just being the scapegoat for somebody else's bad behavior and just never thought it would happen to me. But again, it happened. It is what it is. I wish them the best and I just want to move forward from it and play pickleball, work in pickleball. I love it and I'm going to stay involved with it. So yeah, that's my little tirade. So
no, I mean, we've heard so many interviews with the players talking about mental. So, you know, it goes both ways. And unfortunately, I think you had a couple issues both ways with the injury as well. So yeah. I watch a lot of pickleball, so I don't even care about the results. You've definitely had better results the last month or two, but I'm watching the points and the shot selection and the cleanliness of mid-court play and all that. So I definitely think that you have found another gear than when you first started playing again. Unfortunately for you, yeah. When you first started playing again, you played several with me. That was that was your first poor decision. But I can definitely see you coming out of it and being a little more cleaner, not just with your contact, but with your decision making as well, which is, if not more, as important, if not more important. So yeah, that's good to see. You know, I want everyone to be playing their best and have those, you know, those best opportunities. And yeah, I think it's a good place for your game right now.
Yeah, I think there's a few guys in Challenger that will probably make that leap up to Premier. You know, I'd like to be one of them. I think Pablo Tellez has done a really good job this first half of the year, not just in MLP, which he's had great results in, but also PPAs. He's done really well with Federico. They're consistently getting top five in PPAs. So, you know, and that's not just a testament to Federico, but also Pablo. His game's come a long way. I remember playing with Pablo when I lived in Florida, and he didn't take it very seriously at the time, was always good at singles, but would just play doubles occasionally for fun and just wasn't very good just because he hadn't put the time in. And he's really developed into a great doubles player and he's earned his way up. So I think he's a must, especially being a lefty and being a strong right side player. It's super valuable. So, you know, big props to him. And yeah, I'd be shocked if he doesn't go Premier.
Oh yeah. No, I think so. Yeah. And even though he does have a little more variance in his style, meaning that he goes for a bit more, he likes to be aggressive, the consistency of the results and the product, however you end up getting there on court, has been very good for him. And yeah, it's been very good on all three disciplines. So I think he is one that I would keep my eye on. Now, he's almost a veteran at this point. He basically is. And then you have, say, for instance, Chicago Slice winning the Challenger. You have Connor Garnett. Some peaks and valleys in his game and game style, but yep. Seems like a good kid, explosive athleticism, explosive movement. He could be one of those possible upside plays and late in the Premier draft. You had a really nice run from Brendan Long for a couple months. He's more of a veteran player, and I would be a little hesitant to make that great 1 or 2 months push him to premiere. I'm not sure I would draft him in that spot. Brendan, if you're listening, make me eat my words. I will eat them if I need to. And I know, another person that falls in that upside category would be Christian Alshon. I do not believe he's quite there yet to make that jump, but he certainly has the skill set to do so. Am I missing any names on the male side? We talked about yourself as well. That might be an option.
Yeah, I think Stephon has been mentioned.
Ah, Stephon, yeah.
You know, another good lefty, which obviously pretty valuable. Again, capable in singles, probably mixes his best event with a big serve, big forehand, good crashing ability, fast hands. Probably a little bit of a liability in men's, but again, great player and one that's in the conversation. Hunter Johnson's been mentioned in that conversation as well. Results have dropped off a bit, right? So has struggled a little bit in men's, hasn't done quite as well as he probably should have, especially having Paris as his mixed partner, but obviously a stud in singles. So yeah, I mean, there's a number of guys. And again, it's going to come down to what, like been mentioned before, it's going to be a fluid draft and people are going to look at not just skill level and ability, but you know, who can play those. Like we talk about, like it comes down to those high pressure points at late in the game. Oftentimes who can play those big points really well, whose energy meshes well with other players on that team, because this is probably, you know, you're talking about probably the fourth pick for these teams. So they want to make sure, you know, that last pick is going to be more than anything, a good chemistry mix, a good energy mix, you know, on top of just ability and skill level. So.
Right. Yeah. If this is the talent gap, you pick the best player. If this is the talent gap, these extra things really factor in energy, you know, camaraderie with your crew, all that stuff, communication ability between your teammates. So, you know, that's a really good point. And I did forget about Stephon, and I do think that mixed is his best event. Yeah. And when you're getting one of these alpha girls, one of these left-handed guys can be a great option to finish off your roster, because these alpha girls love to play left, and they can play left for both. So, that lefty factor, and Stephon, you know, with a great cleaner upper. I don't know what it is about lefty guys and mix. Tyler Leung the same way. Yeah. They can put the ball away, which is super important. So I know we missed somebody. We always do. And now, unfortunately, we got a couple guys that could jump up. Anybody who jumps off the page at you as someone who might drop down, whether that's overall skill set or just not quite playing to that high performance level in the three MLP events?
You know, I could just name the people that I've heard being discussed in this, and the three names I've heard being discussed and that could potentially move down are Eric Lang, DJ Young, Kyle Yates. You know, Eric has gone full time at Pickle, so his motivation's there, that's for sure. And he's working his tail off. So not sure actually how his results were at MLP in San Clemente, but I know he's taking it very seriously now and kind of put everything else aside to focus on Pickle full time, which is cool. DJ, not sure how, I don't know how these guys necessarily did at MLP. I know, right. I know Kyle, I saw the Kyle Travis match against Heart Apes. Where AJ and
he played great, unfortunately.
He played great. But I guess the concern with Kyle is that he's not playing a lot of pickleball. And he's even like playing the PPA leading up, him and Travis didn't do great. And yeah, so question with Kyle is, do you want somebody on your team that's you know, pickleball is not their full-time focus. Pickleball playing is not their full-time focus. Could be a little bit of a liability when you have other guys that are super hungry and motivated. So, those are the three names that I've heard. Have you heard anything else?
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm not sure for Kyle Yates, the sustainable long-term strategy of speeding up 2 out of 3 balls at AJ Kohler and Riley Newman, but it sure as hell worked in the short term, unfortunately. Yeah. So,
maybe like the shock factor, right? What's he doing?
Yeah, no, don't totally. And I think that those names are some names for a variety of reasons. I would say for Eric Lang, it's probably the lesser ability in mixed and singles, straight up men's doubles format. He's in the top 24. I think that's pretty clear cut. Kyle Yates not playing as much pickleball. And the thing about DJ Young is he can win you matches, but it's really up to him. So with his aggressive style and his ability to have so many options and so many offensive shots, a lot of times I feel like it's really just kind of up to him. And I think that's tough as a partner at times to kind of know that your role is supporting, and that happens a lot, but it's going to be up to DJ. And if he brings his A offense or if he brings his C offense, you're going to be in trouble. So that would make a little bit of sense, even though, you know, in terms of age and offensive upside, he would certainly be in the top 24. But given the overall package, it is a little questionable. And I would say after Mesa, the first event, I think it would have been very reasonable for Gabe Tardio or Hayden Patraquin to be on that bubble. But I think that they have played much better the last two events, and I do not think that I would have them out of the top 24 at this point. So I think that those three names are fair from different reasoning, but it's definitely fair, and nothing else really jumps off the page at me right now. So do you think that there's anyone who played Premier that might not play for whatever reason next season?
I've heard some rumblings, but yeah, can't really discuss yet. I think that'll probably come in the next couple of days in terms of announcements. But yeah, there's been some speculation that some players won't participate in season two. I don't think it's a large number. I think maybe a couple, two, three.
Sure, yeah, a handful, but still, it's a big trickle down effect everywhere. So yeah. It affects the back end of the Premier draft. It affects the Challenger draft. So, you know, I mean, it was one player this last time, Paris Todd, and it affected the women's draft because it's like known commodity, known commodity, known commodity. And then it kind of thins out relatively quick. So just having one or two clear cut Premier players play or not play can definitely affect, you know, a lot of the decision making these GMs and owners are having to make in the draft. So,
yeah, and I think that's one name that I believe is coming back to play season two is Paris. Any thoughts on where she might go in the draft?
Yeah, it's tough. It was hard for me as this first year GM not having not played PPAs for a while. So this is a same but different situation as her being a player. She hasn't had the reps against high-end talent. She's been playing very good players and having good success, but she hasn't been playing the top players. So I think if I had to put her somewhere right now, I would probably put it in the 10 to 15 range. I don't think that I would put her in the top 10.
And the 10 to 15 range on the female side?
On the female side. Yeah. On the female side, not overall. Yes, on the female side. And I would have to – I'm not doing Premier – so I've been doing a lot more research on the challenger level players. So I'm not sure the exact number, but I think that off the top of my head, that is where I would slot her. I would have just a couple of those players that were behind her going into season one had she played that have leapfrogged her. And maybe that's wrong, but that's where I would put it right now.
Yep, fair enough.
Yeah, and then we have a couple ladies, the top two names probably would be Hurricane Tyra Black and Vivian Glossman. From a upside skills perspective, that could really take a leap and be for sure premier players. I would still consider them fringy at this point, but I do think that they have that upside and that skill set that trumps several of the more known commodities in the back end of that premier level. Any thoughts on the female side?
Yeah, well, do you have any thoughts on who might fall on the female side? Because if you have Paris coming in, that's going to be one slot, right? So who else is on that fringe of Premier that played Premier in season one that might fall off?
So I would think possibly Lindsay Newman. She has a lot of life going on, and you know, she's kind of in that Kyle Yates situation where I'm not sure how much playing she's going to do. Still a great ball maker, but you know, life gets in the way sometimes. I'm not sure she is going full force into pickleball to commit to that. It's going to be very close as the clump of women, especially when you add a couple extra names into that, is significant. It's probably going to be about 10 ladies, all at a very close talent level for about four or five spots at the end of the draft.
Yeah. I think, in my opinion, there's one female in Challenger that should be in Premier, no doubt. And it's neither of the ladies you mentioned. In my opinion, it's Susanna Barr. Like she's the results. I mean, her results speak for themselves. Like she's always meddling APPs. When she plays PPA, she often meddles in PPAs. Like, I mean, her results get overlooked, but she's beaten almost every player, you know, in Premier. Like her is solid. Obviously a little quirky personality, but wants to win more than else. Like she's a fighter. And I think there might be a little kind of lasting stigma of not great in pressure spots, which is tough. But at the same time, I feel like she's earned her way back. And she's, in my opinion, definitely one of the top 24 ladies.
Yeah, no, she's got a lot of game. I keep thinking, hey, maybe she'll just kind of fall off or the end is near given her age, just because she is in her mid 40s. But man, she really has stepped up and played big pickleball in the last few months. And I think at the first MLP, she was a huge liability in singles. Yeah. And I actually think she's improved her ground strokes quite a bit. And I'm not going to say, you know, she's a top five lady in singles or anything, but she more than held her own in the points that I saw. And I think has gotten her singles game at least to a level where it's not an oh no situation. It's just a not her strength situation. So that's a good call with Susanna Barr. And I mean, she maybe just the random cluster of errors that she'll throw in from time to time is taking away from how great her body of work really is. So that's a good call by you, Rob. And of course, we had someone at the ended up on your team, but was really a consideration by a lot of people to be Premier, and that's Sierra Gayton Leach. And you know, she is maternity, so I think that she's going to be out of the situation. Definitely still a challenger player, but I can't imagine someone who might have been in the mix for season one. I can't imagine her making that jump for season two.
Speaking of maternity, is what's Corinne's plan?
Corinne, she looks like she is not going to play. She had to make a tough decision, just given travel and the whole process of everything, and you know, getting help, which I think, you know, one of our sets of parents would have done. But it looks like she is not going to play, and that might end her MLP career. Other tournaments she is going to plan on play at least a handful every year, and try to play the ones that we can drive to or a little bit closer in the Midwest or the East Coast. Going to the West Coast with the baby is, it's bad enough either way, but with the baby, definitely tough. So she had to make that hard decision.
Got it. Well, she will be missed.
Yeah, no, I think she was probably one of the better overall values from where she was drafted to the product she put on the court. So I was proud of her. I thought she played great.
Yeah. She hitting balls yet, or how's she doing?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She got me out there to drill the other day.
Nice.
And when she goes with the baby to Pinehurst, about an hour away, when I go out of town to hang out with their parents, and there's a little crew there. So she's been getting her touches in, and you know, it's like riding a damn bike for that one. She's in there just dropping them in the kitchen.
Downy
soft immediately.
It's like you, Adam.
Yeah. We're pretty dang similar skill set. Get lit up at the kitchen a little bit, but we get there. We get there.
Don't miss a lot. Don't miss a lot.
That's right. That's right.
Speaking of Downy Soft, how I saw you in San Clemente playing with that Power Air. How's the feel of it? You like it?
Oh, I'm loving it. The feel is getting better and better. I mean, no possible way for it to be perfectly clean after 6 years with the same paddle. Yeah. But the mid court is coming around big time, and I'm liking the counters a lot. I could actually like when I was playing games with it, I don't play everyone very often, so it's hard to tell. I play with Corinne so much. I could see some of the speed ups on the forehand and the counters with the backhand kind of messing with her and getting on her a little quicker than she's used to. So we're so in tune with each other's game to see her have a little issue with a couple of the things that I was doing, it's noticeable that the pop is there. And so I'm basically speeding up every forehand and countering, punch countering with the one-handed backhand as much as I can, and mixed results, but I like it.
How much of a difference is the counter compared to the paddle tech you play with forever?
It's quite a bit.
It's significant.
When you hit that thing clean, it comes off. And I would even say that I have been more impressed with the speed up ability than the counterattacks. Counterattacks have gotten better, but I kind of have that scoop forehand, you know? And so, you know, belly button and above, it's an attack, but to create from that knee or kind of mid thigh level, basically I needed to body them up previously. Now I actually goes in occasionally. So that's kind of exciting.
I've got this right here. I haven't hit with it too much, but it's the 006.
The new guy.
It's the new guy. I'm not great like testing new paddles because like I'm very particular like with feel. Like I said, I'm a reps guy. So like not a lot of talent in this body. So I can't just like a Mac Mittens or Zane Affleck just flawlessly go switch paddles in between like middle of matches. Sure. Like I have to be dialed on one paddle. So if I test it for paddles, it really messes with me mentally, just maybe because I'm mentally fragile. But I think I like the feel of it, but I'm like having played with the Power Air now for like most of this year, I can't imagine going away and having the heavy counters go away. Like I need that so much. It's so important to my game to have the heavy, hard counters. I just don't know if I could leave that.
Yeah, no, you need it. You want it. You have to have those counters. So
I'll figure out the feel on any paddle, right? I just need hard counters.
That's right. Life's hard, bro. Why can't it be easy? Why can't it be easy? It just isn't, is it?
No, but shout out to Selkirk because they've been great to both of us now.
They've
been great, great supporting the pod and making sure that we're keeping this baby rolling, up and going, and bringing you the latest in pickleball news on the pro side.
Yeah, I had a short break from commentary, and I was able to get on Selkirk TV podcast talking about the future of pickleball. So they're going from all angles, pro level, content media level as well. So they're going for it, and
really dropped the ball on giving James Ignatowicz a podcast. But hey, they want that. You know, he's a great interview, but he's not the best podcast host. But maybe he'll get better. You know,
you never know. And
he can always aspire to be us.
That's right. That's right. I might have to go on there randomly and help the guy out. I'll be like, James, just be a guest, be a host, but be a guest.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to wear all those hats, you know, Rob?
It is. I mean, again, great interview, poor host.
Oh, got to do a shout out before we end here, Rob, to my boy, Heart Eight's owner and GM, Tim Parks.
Oh, yeah.
He had been doing a bit of losing to BLQK owner Richie Twazen, and I was able to jump in the mix and get that man a win, and he needed me because he played like shit. So it was myself and Tim Parks versus Jesse Irvin and Richie Twazen. They're both around that 3.5 to 3.8 range. And of course, you know, Jesse Irvin. So we were down 3 or 4 points in the heart of the match, ended up winning by 2. Zane Navratil and Rafa Hewitt bet against me. So they lost money. That made me very excited. And all I would say is that I did get an extended warm up with Thomas Wilson, and I might've overextended as I did get winded a couple times in the one game of rally scoring to 21, but we were able to get it done. Way to come up big there, Timbo. Can't wait to see you at the draft next week in NYC.
Who's betting against Adam Stone? What?
I don't know.
So just to give context, it was you and Tim versus Richie and Jesse Irvin.
Right. So basically I have a slight edge on Jesse and Duper, and Richie Twazen has a slight edge on Tim. So it kind of made sense to have an even matchup, basically.
So on paper, even matchup. It was 21-19, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, classic rally scoring is going to be whoever plays the big points best. And who's better than Adam Stone under pressure? Let's go.
That's right. So I did step on Tim and fall in the kitchen, and I did almost hit him trying to take an overhead. But like I said, we got it done. Maybe we'll run it back one of these days.
And speaking of Tim, he is, he's on a pretty short leash with his partners and co-owners of the Heart Eights, but he is going to be on the pod, and we're going to make him say stuff that he regrets saying, but he will do it. And it'll probably be in the next couple of weeks, probably after the draft in July, or do you say
yeah,
before?
Yeah, I think so. So, okay. And you're exactly right, Rob. Once we get him on, he cannot help himself. And unfortunately for Rick Chan, he's going to have to clean up whatever Tim says, but we're getting him on. And I tell you what, he knows the players. That's great and all, but he knows the behind the scenes, the business of pickleball. And he is very, very much in the mix and a very smart guy. So you'll have to want to check that one out, because he's got plenty of info that is not mainstream info that you might know about gossip and players and tournament results. This is a much different situation.
Dude, he's probably the most well-versed guy in pickleball in terms of like what's happening on the business side of pickleball. I mean, that dude knows everything that's happening in the pickleball world. It's wild.
And so he sends out like anyone that has any investment in the league, he sends out an email, and I'm talking a novel after the events about, things to improve, what he thought about this, da 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 da. But I mean, I tell you what, that might rub some people the wrong way, but you got to have someone to do that to get the ball rolling on these things. And he's very much okay with being the bad cop and making things happen. So maybe we're a good team, good cop, bad cop. I make a good team with him because he's the bad cop as well. So excited to have him on and excited for the draft as well.
Yeah, dude, he just loves the sport and it comes across super genuine.
Yeah, anytime people are into things, it's endearing and you can see it. It's palpable. You can feel it. And so, passion is contagious, and he has it for pickleball, just like we all do.
That's a good stopping point, I think. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. I think it's perfect.
I mean, we didn't see AJ this time, but I want AJ next time.
Yeah. He was having some issues. I think he's a little gassy or something, but he was not in his best mood. So we'll save it for next time for sure.
Sounds good. All right, man.
All right. Have a good one, bud.
Later.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.